I want to spend the next few minutes just talking about this parsha of Midbar. Again, in America, it's Michu Kosai still. But in Eretz Yisrael, we know it's parsha of Midbar. We're a week off. And I want to talk about something that happens at the very beginning of the parsha, about Midbar, which is something that the way Chazal described it sounds like a very unique opportunity. But we'll see, it didn't happen right away when we left Mitzrayim. And that is the idea of the Digalim. The Torah describes that we start to have encampments around the Sefer, around the Arun. And we have four sides, as we know, north, south, east, west. And every side had three tribes that were assigned to a certain position in those, around the Arun. Every side had a position that they were assigned to. And not only that, but this whole thing actually went back a long time earlier on. Chazal say when we received the Torah, I'll read to you inside. There's a Medrash Rabba, this is Farsha. It says, this is Farsha in Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis, it says, Each al diglo, bo'osos, lebeis avosam, yachanu, b'nai Yisrael. Each person according to his flag. Again, the idea was that we were given flags, we were given like team colors to encamp around the Torah. Says the Medrash, V'shashen nigla kadosh baruch hu al har Sinai, this was basically Gemara in Shabbos, which discusses Matan Torah and Har Sinai, which is very appropriate for our time, obviously. When Hashem reveals himself to us in Har Sinai, Chav Beis Revo Shel Malachim V'chulei. There were 22,000 Malachim that came down and were part of this giving of the Torah, whatever that means. V'yukulam Asuyim Degalim Degalim. And they were all in formation of Degalim Degalim in these encampments. Kevan Shira'ahu son Israel, Shemasun Degalim Degalim. When Israel saw the encampments that were being situated by these malachim, Hitchilu B'tavim L'Degalim. They desired, they wanted to have this existence. They wanted to have a similar opportunity to have a formation like this. So Hashem says back to them, I'm gonna give you the opportunity, and eventually Miyad Hodiyam Kadosh Baruch Hu Osam Yisrael Amar Moshe Leich Asay Otam Degalim K'moshen Yisavu. Make them Degalim like they wanted. Okay. Now, this happened in Matan Torah, which was, as we know, 50 days after leaving Mitzrayim. But we have now in Bamidbar, we're starting it for the first time, Degalim. Why is it only starting now? How come Hashem didn't, immediately after Matan Torah, put us right now in Degalim? We have a whole entire part of the end of Sefer Shemos, all of Vayikra, until Bamidbar. What took so long to give us our want, our desire to be like the angels? And number two, what does it mean that we desired to be in Degalim like the angels? What does that even mean? What kind of desire was that? Was it a physical desire we had? We want to be in this formation. It's a very strange desire to have. What is it? How do we put our finger on what that desire actually means? We'll get to another question. We'll get to in a minute also. We'll start with the first one. Why does Hashem wait so long to give us our Degalim? It's a very important idea found in the Emes Liyakov. That comment brings the following idea down. He says that if you were to have team colors, we all have our own jerseys. We all have our own, our own flags, whatever it might be. So what's going to happen is you're going to start creating division. Even something small. Let's say you have a certain team that you like, a certain team that you're a fan of. So you have two people who have so much in common. One grew up in Boston, one grew up in New York, and they hate each other. Why? Because the jersey that I root for, well, that you root for, are different. No, it's not even people anymore, because everyone changes teams all the time. It's jerseys. I root for a uniform. So my uniform is different. So the uniforms cause division. And not only that, but it even gets worse. People even kill themselves sometimes. If you go to any soccer matches in Europe, there are many people who have had brawls. There are people who've been killed. And even recently, I think in San Francisco and in Los Angeles, the Dodgers and the Giants had a recent incident in a parking lot where they fought after a game with a person either brain dead or they were killed. I forget which one it was. You're fighting over the silliest things. You can have division that causes people to be separated. And therefore, there's a danger that comes along to Degalim. So what changes? Says Rav Kamenetsky, brings down Emes Yaakov. What changes is when you have something that anchors you. Now that's the Torah, the Aron. The Aron, after all the Kelim were built, and you had the Kohanim given positions, and the Levim given positions, as we had in Sefer Vayikra mostly, and garments and clothing, and then everyone gets to walk around the Aron, which has inside of it the Luchos. So that now has an anchoring. Every person is anchored. And now we're just different pieces. For example, recently, I think, yes, last night I heard that Bill Belichick went to the Bruins game and he was waving some banner and everyone was cheering. I don't know why it made news, but that was apparently in the news. Right? It's exciting. Now, why is he cheering for the Boston Bruins? Because he's a New England Patriot. Now, the different uniforms, different sports, as a matter of fact. but they're all centered around Boston, around New England. And therefore, you can have different people, different roles and jobs, but you're anchored. Their anchor is New England. That's their anchor, their place. Our anchor is the Torah. And therefore, everyone can surround the Torah differently. We have different roles. We have different jobs, different personalities, different hashkafas even. As long as we're all centered the same Shemayim around the Torah, then we can function properly. And therefore, says Yaakov, you had to wait to start the process off when we could anchor ourselves around Torah. And the question becomes, how do we go out and make sure that we're still centered around Torah? The fact that we were given the Torah does not mean we're centered around Torah. It means it's part of our legacy of where we came from. But is it true that we still have Torah as our anchor? Or decisions we make in life right now center around Torah value? If they did, then we could be different from each other and still appreciate. It's when they don't anymore. People, why do people fight all the time? Why are we fighting? Because the other sects of Jews don't believe that the other people not like them are anchored around Torah. There's something else that they feel is more important than Torah. And therefore, it's hard to respect. And it's easy to find animosity. Even though they're probably wrong, I assume that everyone really is anchored around Torah, even different hashkafas. But that's the problem they have. It says Rav Yaakov, difference is healthy. Different colors, different flavors, different tastes. That's a healthy variety. But only if there's an anchoring around in Torah. In Israel, it's much different than America. In America, you don't feel this as much as we do in Israel. But in Israel, someone could be a frum Jew. But they're different than you are. They look differently. They say different things on Yom HaAtzmaut. They have different opinions than whatever it might be. And they're like your public enemy now. You know, you can't serve them in a restaurant. If you see them in the Ashar, you'll get things thrown at you. And it goes both ways, by the way. Everyone is against everyone else. It's all like that. What happened to us? How do we go from having the galim, a healthy variety? Because our leadership, for some reason, is having a problem right now, making people realize that as long as you're the Shem Shemayim, and you go and you have Gedolim you speak to, don't do things on your own. You have Gedolim that you speak to help you make decisions in life. And by the whole different variety, Gedolim who are the more Haredi world, more the Tilumi world, but you have to go to find leaders who are anchored in Torah themselves, then you can too have an anchoring in Torah. It's when we don't do that anymore, we kind of do our own thing. That's where the biggest risk comes in. And that's the challenge we face today, is how could it be that people, Shem Shemayim, can't figure out that each other is Shem Shemayim, it's because we don't have any more the confidence in one another that Torah anchors us. Now we can't change the world, but we can change ourselves. Does Torah anchor us? We anchored by Torah. How do I know that? Well, does Torah define decisions that we make? Is it about Torah when you decide certain things in life? If the answer is yes, if everything we make in life is about Torah, doesn't mean only Torah, but also Torah. In fact, Torah is a major factor in we make in life, then Torah anchors me. I can be different than someone else. If I can appreciate him, he'll appreciate me also because he sees that I'm anchored like he is. But when things have priorities over Torah, you can pick up any priority you want, you make up. Sports over Torah. Money over Torah. A girl over Torah. Anything. Fun over Torah.
College.
Well, I assume that's either the girl, the fun, or the money. That's probably why people go to college mostly. So those things are over Torah. Then yeah, then you're making a mistake and you're showing the world that Torah is not my anchor. And then we have divisiveness in Klal Yisrael. That's how it starts. What else does Dugalim give me? What else does the camps give me? Camps give me an order. If you remember, Dr. Rosenbaum mentioned in the panel discussion that we had, not Beit Shemesh, he said, proper planning prevents poor performance. The idea that a person has a Seder, a place to go, a place that he's supposed to do, he has a game plan, a strategy, that's another way to achieve success. The Galim are so, what do we see with these angels? We saw planning. We saw strategies. That's a very special, important thing to realize that people see. Because if you have a game plan, you have a strategy, you can get somewhere in the end. How are you ever going to get from point A to point B without having a point B? You plug in ways. Destination? Unknown. You know, how do I get there? I don't know. Where are you heading to? So first, you have to figure out, where am I supposed to be heading to in the first place? Have a game plan. Have a strategy. Having a Seder in life helps you get somewhere else. It could be a big, gadol Seder, like, where do I want to get to in life? How I see myself in 10 years from now? How do I want to leave the world at 120? That could be a big adult type of Seder. It could be even something very small. Remember when I was in my second year in Israel, I found we learned Maseches Gittin, which I'll do next year. I'm sorry, we learned Baba Kama. This year we learned Gittin my first year in Israel. I found in my Baba Kama, my schedule of my second year in Israel. I found it. And I was like, looked at it, I slotted away, nap. Part of my schedule was a nap. Sleep. Eat. Playing ball. It was different days of the week. Everything was on a schedule. Now, you think, listen, I need a schedule. Of course, I need a schedule for my learning hours, my chavrusas, but everything else is like more of like a variety. I'll decide what, no. Scheduling, it's brought, so I brought the name over here. I brought down the name of Rav Zundel Salant. He quoted in his name that he would have in his weekly schedule on Erev Shabbos a time to clean his clothes. It was a certain hour. He put a certain hour as when he would clean his clothing. Part of his schedule. It sounds very like OCD, right? Every single, so the answer is, that's what a Seder provides you, that you know how you're doing. It's so easy to say, like, I'm doing pretty well when you have no plan anyways. I mentioned many times, and this year I'll mention it again, is that we go through the year sometimes coming in without a hope or a dream. We don't know who knows going to be. How do you gauge success? I don't know. I think I do well. Why? I learned more than I used to learn. I think without it more seriously, it seems to be successful. That's true. When you have no goal in mind, we can put success on anything, any level of success. Let's say your goal to win a championship, a basketball championship, not to a target, NBA. And you went to the semifinals. Were you successful? No. But you were the fourth best team out there, maybe third best. But I wasn't aiming for that. If you had no goals, that's a tremendous success level. Making the playoffs for the Nets was a tremendous success. They didn't have a dream to win a championship. The playoff was like beyond their wildest imagination. They would never make the playoffs even. Okay, so they had no goal. So anything is success. But the moment in time when you have a goal, it's so easy to gauge success. But our problem is we have no goals oftentimes. At least not daily goals. We have overall goals. So I can wait. I don't have to judge myself on a day. No reason to. I'll judge myself over the course of the year. So any given day, I could die, whatever. It doesn't matter what I did that day. But if the year mattered, I could say, okay, I was successful. Why? Because I grew. I developed and I grew. But imagine instead that you had actually a daily schedule. And I slide us with nap time, base medrash time, learning time, davening time. There's not a day that goes by that you don't judge yourself. How did I do today? How did I do? And if you don't have a good day, you know right away I didn't have a good day. But if you don't have schedules like that, then it's very hard to judge ourselves. And by the way, oftentimes we give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. Because it's easier to. I don't have to explain myself to anybody. Myself. And I'm better than I was beforehand, so I had a successful time. And you're certainly right that you were better than you were beforehand. But does that give success? What were the other options I had in front of me? We had this morning $10,000 success versus $100 million success. Both were successful. But if you had a dream of $100 million, the $10,000 is not successful at all. But no dream at all, that sounds pretty good. So I have two choices. Don't dream. And just be happy. So easy. Just be happy. Everything's good, right? Or dream big and disappoint yourself sometimes. You're allowed to be. There's nothing wrong with saying, I should have been better. There's something seriously wrong saying, I'm 100% fine. I'm happy where I am. I got everything I should have gotten out of it. That's something wrong with that. Who in the world ever got everything I should have gotten out of it? Most people don't do everything. No one's perfect. You're allowed to be proud of yourself while still trying to get better. But to feel like everything I should have gotten, I got, it's hard to, unless you had no goals or very vague goals, it's hard to appreciate that point. What Klal Yisrael saw was clear formulation, clear designation of things that made them realize this is what I want in life. I want to have clearer things assigned to me so I can make sure I maximize myself. That's what they desired at Matan Torah. That's what they saw the angels doing. There's a guy who goes with us every single morning, almost every morning in the van to yeshiva. He doesn't teach in Torah Traga, Rabbi Lebarsky. Some of you may have met him already and enjoyed his speech he gave to us. He has, you know, we all have to-do lists, but he has a daily to-do list. Every day, and on the way back from the van, he checks his to-do list every single day. I never look at it. I don't want to look at it. I don't have one of those. I feel embarrassed whenever I see him to-do list. I know I don't have one of those. If you had a daily to-do list, then you can't like hide from facts. I was not good today. I didn't do well today. That's on me. I got to fix that problem. Don't run away from critiquing yourself. Don't run away from it. I mentioned the irony today. God did not give you your soul so you can give it back to him pretty much the way you got it in the first place. I didn't do anything bad today. I got a little better. I'm aiming on keeping where I am right now. God didn't give you your soul today, so it will be the same way. It wasn't worse. And he gave it back to me. That's what you're trying to do with it? Something seems off about that attitude. So how do you fix that? By the digalim, by having a seder, by demanding for myself, by noticing successes and failures, and recognizing I'm not ready. I messed up. How do I fix this? And by the way, don't rely only on yourself when that happens. Speak to someone else. I see I'm not doing a good job as I think I could be doing. Can you give me some tips over here? So one last point I want to share with you, and then we'll end with this. The Sefer written down, the Sefer is called Lahagid, the Magidim of Yerushalayim. Different people give different auras. So this one is said over by Rochel Mishradron. Discuss the Galim. He wants to understand, he says, why is it that if we were described Klal Yisrael at such a high level, they wanted so much to have these digalim, these encampments. When Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem to give them the digalim, the Medrash says that he was worried to give it to them. As we mentioned, he was worried there would be inner fighting, there would be a civil war, there would be divisiveness. How could the same people that were so inspired and wanted, by the way, he brings down, what was this desire of digalim? It wasn't Seder, he says. It was, they had a taiva for Ruchani. This is the most unbelievable thing. They had spiritual desire. They saw the angels. They said, I want to be like that. They yearn to have spirituality. The same way you would yearn for a piece of cake or for something delicious or for a physical pleasure, they started to yearn for spirituality. So says Rishon Shmadron, then how could it be if they were holding such a place, they would now be distracted or worried there would be divisiveness? How could you be desiring spirituality and still expect divisiveness? And the answer is, the Yetzer Hara gets paid a lot of money to do his job. He does a great job of it. He's been hired for many years already. He'll be hired to the end of time. His job is that even people who are so high, such a level, are challenged. Everyone has their own challenge. He brings over he quotes David Bloy, that something called Yom Kippur Katan, which every Erev Rosh Chodesh, at Mincha time, something called Yom Kippur Katan, where you have like slichos that you say, and most people don't do it, but there are people who are doing it in the world who do it. And part of the nusach, I'll read to you inside of this tefillah. Masha sarta hitarti, that which you prohibited, God, I allowed. Umashi tarta asarti, that which you allowed, I prohibited. Masha timesa tiharti, that which you made tummy, I said it's tahor. Masha tiharta timesa, that which you said is tahor, I say it's tummy. That's the video we do, part of the video we do on Erev Kippur, on Yom Kippur Katan, on Erev Rosh Chodesh. So he asks, I understand why you would say vidoy, what you said is not allowed is allowed. I said something that's usher. What's the vidoy of something that's not allowed, that is allowed, I say it's not allowed? What's the vidoy in that? What's the problem in that? So he points out and says, the problem is that you're not mevatel yourself to God. That's the problem. You want to have a say still. God says it's allowed? No, I don't think it's allowed. I'm not going to do it. I mean, machmir upon myself. Not because I'm worried about a siyag. I'm not worried about doing something wrong. Because I want to have a say in what I do also. And he points out, he says, that's a yetzer hara, where you don't want to be told what to do. Even by every bonus show, I don't want to be told what to do. I'll decide how firm I'm going to be. I'll decide things I don't want to do, even if they're mutter to me. That level of frumkeit, he says, deserves a vidui. Again, if you do something that's usher, you must know you think it's usher because you're afraid of what it'll lead to later on, call a kavod. It's called a siyag l'torah. Rabbi Yonah says, you're not a true Yirei Shemayim if you don't do that. But not that. I'm not eating this type of food. You know why? Because I want to be more machmir. What's it lead to? Nothing. But I want to be involved in my say. I want to have a say in it as well. He says, that is a mistake. Even though it looks like it's frumkeit. So Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara plays a very big role in our lives. He brings down the following mashal, and I end with this. He says, Rav is a margla de pume de Rav. Gemara Brachos, he quotes. Margla de pume means, it's ragil de pume. It's always said. Rav always would say this line. This was his go-to line. Certain things, the catchphrase they say, this was Rav's catchphrase. Ready? Listen very closely. Lo kol mazeh olam haba. This world's not like the next world. Olam haba. v'lo masa v'matan, v'lo kina, v'lo sinna, v'lo tachras. The next world does not have eating, does not have drinking, does not have relations and having children. There's no business there. There's no jealousy. There's no hatred. There's no competition. El tzadikim yoshvin v'atroseim b'roseim. The enemies of the Shekhinah. But tzadikim are sitting and their crowns are on their head and they're getting basking in the pleasure of God. Shne'amar, as it says, in he quotes again, the Brachos, he quotes the Pasuk in the Chumash. V'yachazu as Elohim v'yachlu v'yishchu. They saw God and they ate and they drank, discussing the mistake that the Zekanim made while they saw God at Matan Torah, certain Zekanim. Now, Rav was a chashav person. This was something he'd have to remind everyone about. Why was it necessary to remind everyone that in Shemayim there's no eating or drinking? Did Rav have a struggle with that? Was Rav think that was the case? He had to remind himself about it? He's the following mushel. He says, back in the day, he says, he used to have to travel to Israel. It would take you months. America to Israel would take you months. And Israel back to America would take you months back. On a boat. Again, when I was around already, we all took planes. But within, 75 years ago, whatever it was, people took boats. That's how they traveled. And so did the Rav, who was talking to the Torah, took a boat also. He used to take boats. It took him weeks, not months, but it was once at a certain time. It was months. And because they had smaller boats, they didn't have enough fuel, they had to go and fuel up in certain places. So there was a story told, a group of people who were going from Israel to America, they had to stop off in France to refuel. Now, the trip is X amount of time it takes to do the trip. And, while they're on trip, everyone who was Israeli didn't know English. They all were, wanted to learn English because they wanted to get land in America and be able to speak to the natives and be able to be successful and maybe get a job for themselves. But there's one guy who had a chachma. Stopping in France for a few days, I'm going to learn French. I'm going to learn French. And sure enough, got off the boat in France, and this guy was like the man. He knew French. And everyone else was like following around. And it was great. He felt like $1 million. 3 days later, they come back on the boat again, and they all get to America. And he only knew French. And everyone else knew English. And he was lost. He was lost. And he couldn't move on. He couldn't get anywhere in life. But for those 3 days, he was a hero. Because he knew French. When he went on a trip and they refueled, he was the man. But who cares about 3 days when you talk about living in some new country for the next 50 years of your life? What intelligent person would cash in 50 years so he could have 3 days worth? The answer is no one of intelligence would do that. Nobody. Without exception. But sometimes we forget what we're holding in life. So Rav had to walk around telling everyone, it's not about eating, it's not about drinking, it's not about women, it's not about money, it's not about anything else. The key is connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's it. Because otherwise you're going to spend a few days killing it. He's a man. Until you're not the man anymore. You go to Shemayim, and that's the wrong language you learn. It's the wrong language you learn. He quotes a line here, and I end with his line. One of the Gedolei Admorim tells a story, saw a chassid of his. And this chassid was so involved in business and building. And the Rebbe said, what are you so involved in? Why are you working so hard? So the chassid said, Harei tzarich kesef, malachios, I need money. I need to make a living. The Admor said back to him, Nachon, nachon, you're certainly right. But you also need to die. What are you going to die with? What am I going to live with? Well, I need money. What are you going to die with? Do you factor that in all? What are you going to die with? It's all about what you're living with. So it's about your college choice and your profession that you have and the cars you drive and the house that you live in. That's beautiful for living. That's important also. But do you equally factor in, if not more, what are you going to die with? And obviously the person heard these words, was shaken by them. Shaken. And it said, Oso chassid niya migdoli admorim. This chassid became a great admor later on also. Why? This is a very important line. Shenichnath kechit shinun belibo. Because he let this arrow shot whoosh, right in his heart. He let it. It's so easy to get lost and to learn French and to think, how am I going to live? But what about studying America? English for America. It's worth 3 days to be the man for for 50 years of being a foreigner where you can't get around afterwards? To plan on how you're going to live, but not how you're going to die? Rav, who was a Tana, it wasn't Tana, but it was Tana Pollock, we treat him like a Tana. He was one of the greatest Amorim we had, if not the greatest Amorim we had. Felt the need to remind himself and his Talmidim all the time of this lesson. It's true that there are things that are important, eating is important. A wife, getting married, having children, the utmost importance. Parnassa, so important. But when do you stop putting those things above Kadosh Baruch Hu? When is your anchor the Torah? And when it's not that way, then all of our divisiveness and our struggles come to the forefront. And all the unhappiness in the world is because we're not living the way God wanted. We're not. People who are in poverty, but the biggest of the Hashem, are so happy. They're happy. Do they want more money? For sure they do. Of course. Want to give the kids more? Of course they do. But they walk home every day to their family of children, give them a big hug on their leg, in tattered clothing and torn shoes. Daddy, I love you so much. And the father will sit down with his kid in his lap, teaching him words of Torah and educating him the way of the world. Versus the other person, who's a master businessman, comes home late at night when his kids are sleeping already. And on weekends, he spends some time with him a little bit. And his kids get frustrated as they go through life. They're not loving life. They're not. And they have all the toys they could possibly want. They don't have the values. They're not anchored in Torah. You don't have to be poor to be anchored in Torah. You'd be rich to be anchored in Torah also. You could. But don't ever choose anything that takes away Torah as your anchor. Ever. Because if you do, the stories we're describing, the people we're describing here, that's the sad lesson Rav had to remind us all the time. Remind yourself, not only how you're going to live, but how you're going to die. What language should you be learning right now to make sure we succeed as much as we should be in life? A beautiful Shabbos.